We're back, man.
Really?
Another one.
Okay, Khaled. I just realized as soon as I turn the record button on here that I don't even know what we're doing. I mean, I know what we're doing.
Right.
But I don't know what we're doing.
We're continuing on with our journey, or maybe in your case, the descent into 1994.
Oh, yeah. Two people leave, one don't come out.
Yes.
So, yes. Yeah, I don't even know what we're doing.
We're continuing on with 1994 debut albums.
Oh, okay. So this is part three then?
This is actually, yeah, part three, because there's so many debut albums in 1994. It's
don't remind
ridiculous
me.
Because yeah, this wonderful. Was the gold rush of record labels going, we need to sign some rappers ASAP.
Wasn't it 95 worse? Or was 94...
I think between 94 and 96, there was like the most...
Right. Wasn't there like a
new
big...
new artist sign. It's right. Crazy.
Because 95 is going to happen if I'm still alive.
Yeah.
And we're going to do the 95 show. And I can just imagine all of the one hit or one album and gone people in 95.
Oh, man. Well, we haven't even got our ones and dones, which will be coming later.
I'm just setting myself
one
up
one album
for
and
failure.
Out of here. We're going to be doing a segment that will chronicle all of the artists that got signed to major record labels, released an album, and were never heard of again.
You know, it's appropriate you play this OC instrumental, Born to Live, Life to Die. That's might sum up my emotion.
Well, that's a great segue into the first album we're going to be talking about for a breakthrough debut album in 1994 is the album of Bushwick MC Omar Creedle, a.k.a. Yes. OC.
Yeah.
A lot of people didn't really know what the name OC stood for.
No,
it's
they
his
didn't.
Name. It's his real name, Omar Creedle. Sounds like a character on The Wire. Omar Creedle. Well, there is Omar on The Wire.
There is an Omar on The Wire, right? Yeah. All right. So go figure. There's irony.
The album was released October 18, 1994 on Wild Pitch Records. Wild Pitch.
That's an underrated record label. They had a lot of good stuff on there.
They did have some good stuff.
They just didn't have money,
they
right?
had no money to promote. And we'll get right. into that because OC was positioned as their Nas, as Wild Pitch's Nas.
Okay, right.
Answer to Nas. Now, what was your first experience with hearing OC on the mic? Do you remember the first track you ever heard with him?
The first track that I remember, was Time's Up. But he's been on stuff before it.
Right.
He was on Organized Confusion,
exactly.
Fudge Pudge. And he had a great voice. That was the thing with Organ. I know that's 91, and I don't even know why I'm digressing. But they all had great voices, which I didn't quite understand why it didn't hit more. Because they all sound good. You know, they rhyme. Never mind the rhyming, but the voices did them in. And that's what OC drew me in, because OC had a good voice.
Right.
So his baritone, the bass voice that they all have was great. So, yeah, OC I thought was going to be great when he had an album. Time's Up comes up, great stuff. That's the debut of OC.
So he was discovered by MC Search and was actually signed along with Nas to his production company, Searchlight.
He knows how to pick them.
But MC Search shopped both of them to Def Jam. And then, of course, here's the thing. You got Nas, you got OC. You think Def Jam is signing both of those guys?
They ain't going to do that.
No way. It's not happening, yeah. Right? So what MC Search did was put him on the very little-known remix for Back to the Grill. Did you ever hear that?
That is
with
correct.
With OC?
Yes.
And
very
OC
rare
OC shows
find.
Up at about the two-minute mark following Nas.
Yes. Very hard to find.
This was only on wax and on mixtapes, and it was really a great verse. I didn't even hear this verse until much, much years later.
Oh, yeah.
Then
this is as rare as the Scenario remix with Black Sheep.
Yeah, yeah.
So
right.
It's on that level. This isn't on vinyl. You'll probably find people with a tape of it.
Not? Oh, it's
this
only on
isn't
tape.
On vinyl.
It's only on cassette.
You, of course, you could have it on MP3 now. It's probably on YouTube, whatnot. But this was not on vinyl.
But it was really, yeah. Time's Up was the song that got everybody hyped, got everybody excited about this guy. The
right.
buzz was there.
Right.
And I could see Russell Simmons thought OC sounded too much like Coogi Rap. And was like, and he was like, this guy sounds like G-Rap. We already got Columbia's already signing Nas. Def Jam passed on Nas.
You know,
two.
Russell Simmons, okay.
Questionable choices by Russell Simmons.
Very questionable choices, because, like, first of all, he didn't mention that about another rapper that he sounded like. Nas sounded like Coogee Rap.
Right.
So he thinks OC sounds like Coogee Rap. Coogee Rap, first of all, has a lisp. Those two guys do not have a lisp. So Russell Simmons, you got to cut it out. That alone is irrational thinking on Russell Simmons. And why is he thinking Coogee Rap is like the end all to a street rapper? Where did he get that from? Is he bitter because of LL? What is it?
I don't
understand that mentality of thinking everybody sound like Coogee Rap, so I'm not going to sign all these guys.
The Def Jam model, I think, was how unique is their voice and how much I can market them. From a visual,
standpoint. I get it, right. I understand.
Def Jam was just as much of a visual label. You remember those flashy ads in The Source? We've seen them in Vibe. We've seen them in Rap Pages. They have the biggest, flashiest, nicest promos in the business.
That bit them in the ass, though.
It bit them in the ass. Eventually.
It's these companies that are street credible, and then once they go glam, that's what becomes of them, and they become like behind the times, and then Def Jam had to reset. It's a Def Jam reset because they're behind the times. A lot of companies do that, right? They become the hot street company, and then they got to rebrand because they're no longer the hot street company. They're mainstream now. Def Jam became very mainstream.
Right.
So then what do you do? The flashy ads aren't going to work with a guy who likes Coogee Rap.
I think this was one of the issues with OC's overall career as a guy that never got his due. He's beloved by hip-hop fans, by hardcore guys.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say general hip-hop fans.
No.
General hip-hop
fans
has never heard of OC.
No.
But when Time's Up dropped, when this single dropped, and then you remember before the album even released, they released it on the compilation album Wild Pitch Classics.
Yeah.
On the Wild Pitch Classics of vinyl and cassette and CD. Man, people went crazy for this song. You know?
People in New York, the hip-hop guys that aren't the mainstream guys, they loved it.
I'd say this is in Buck Wild as producers, his top five beats of all time.
I believe Buck Wild,
if not his number one.
Yeah.
This is like his premiere come clean. Right?
That is exactly. All right, good comparison there. Yeah.
Now, OC actually jacked this beat from another artist. Did you know that? So
yeah,
this is something that I was doing my research. I had no idea. I read an article, interview with OC, and he said that this beat was originally for Pharrell Monch.
I can see that.
I definitely
can see that.
And it was because Pharrell Monch and OC grew up together. Him, Prince Poetry, and Monch grew up on the same block in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
They had a tight-knit thing. That's why his first appearance was on Fudge Pudge.
Makes sense.
You know, they got the first record label signing, so they wanted to put him on.
Right.
And so they gave him the beat.
Exactly. Zara got excited over that
and
beat.
And the rest is hip-hop history. Yeah,
right.
Dog got
I don't know why you got excited over that beat. What? I mean, it's a good beat, but I'm just saying.
So what's your overall thoughts on the album? 8 out of the 14 tracks were produced by Buck Wild.
I like the album.
I think it's a solid album.
I've had no problems with this album. It's a great album. Great album then. I would listen to it now.
What do you think? Because this album gets compared a lot in hardcore hip-hop circles to Illmatic, in the sense of it's under a same blueprint, right? No real hooks.
No.
Very hip-hop boom-bap beats. Very jazzy interludes. You can see Buck Wild was taking inspiration from Pete Rock and Mecca and the Soul Brother. You have a lot of these 10-second jazz interludes intermingling into the songs.
Okay, here's the thing
with
this guy. And I know my I don't want to call it shtick on this show, is to be like, could I listen to it now? I can't. Back then it was good, but now it just sounds ridiculous to listen to it now. I think the reason why I say that I liked this album then and I could listen to this album now is because of his voice and how it offsets with like a beat like this. It's a very smooth beat. If it was him rhyming over like some rough M.O.P. beat, it would just be, it would tune me out.
I think he knew, he knew exactly the sound he needed for his voice and his cadence.
Right.
And I think him and Buck Wild really gelled well in merging
right.
that. You know?
The piano beat, I was a big fan of that back then.
Right.
Because it always seemed to work over the hardcore rapper rapping over it.
Right.
And that's what works. And it still kind of transcends time.
Right.
I don't know how else to put it. Because a lot of his beats are mellow beats.
Right.
And he's talking like he's got a deep voice.
Well, we've heard Buck Wild going on the opposite end of the spectrum because we talked about on our last show, Artifacts.
Yeah.
And Buckwild really experimenting with more kind of more wilder beats.
Yeah.
As far as more of a faster pace.
Right.
A bit more rugged sound. But
right.
I think this is where Buckwild is in his pocket, in this kind of jazzy.
Okay, you bring up Artifacts. The Busta Rhymes remix.
Right. That's
mellow,
great beat.
Mellow beat?
Yeah.
Who I Am, was that Buckwild?
That's Buckwild as well.
Mellow beat?
Right.
And it just, that kind of, I don't even know what you call it. It's like if you compare it to like Little Brother now.
Mm.
Like, you know how it is? It's like that
yeah,
kind of
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I don't even, I can't think of the name, but it's not a hard, rough sounding beat. It's just a very, vibey is the word maybe. Mm. Vibey beat.
Yeah.
You put a guy that's rhymes like him, it's a perfect combination.
I think, what do you think of Buckwild ranks in the you know, kind of the history of producers in the 90s for you personally?
Well, he kind of went off the deep end on some points. So this was him in his prime. So
this would be his album compared to like a DJ Premier with like a Group Home or a J.Ru album. It's kind of like his, arguably his best work.
This is Buckwild's, I would say this is Buckwild's Nas album.
Yeah. Yeah, it's his Elmatic. You know? Right,
and
it's kind of his.
As far as Artifacts go, that could be Buckwild's J.Ru album, maybe.
I like it.
Because Artifacts can rhyme. It's not like, okay, Group Home, they can't rhyme, and they rhyme simple, but the great beats are great.
Yeah.
The Artifacts would rhyme, so then I don't know what the Group Home comparison of a Buckwild would be. We would have to go into the one and dones,
you're
I think,
right.
to get that
probably
group.
Be more compared to Sunrises in the East.
Something
or,
like that,
or,
Artifacts.
Or, yeah.
So Nas and Artifacts would be the OC and Artifacts. OC and Artifacts would be the Nas and the J.Ru.
How about ranking in the Digging in the Crates production community? It's him, Diamond D, Showbiz, Lord Finesse.
Well,
I mean,
Lord Finesse, all his beats sound the same. And then Diamond D, he varies it up and whatnot, but at the end, he gets complacent at the ending of his career.
So is Showbiz and Buckwild at your top two?
That's got to be the top two.
Nice.
But I would go Showbiz one by like a hair over Buckwild, because Buckwild had some fails.
Okay, so yeah.
Buckwild in later years did not put out good shit, but Showbiz was pretty consistent.
Showbiz was pretty consistent.
And then Diamond D just kind of fell off, and then he tried to come back. And when you fall off for that long a period of time, you're playing catch up.
Yeah.
And then Lord Finesse, from 2020 to 1989, he's been doing the same fucking beat. So he has not evolved. So I'm not going
to
give him.
When we go to 95, we talk about his album, The Awakening.
All right.
Yeah, we can.
I'll tell you something about that album.
We can talk more about Lord Finesse when we discuss that album. Yeah,
that album was annoying as hell.
But Word Life, I think with proper backing, if he wasn't on Wild Pitch and he had more of a commercially viable record label. You know, he sold 100,000 copies. That's not bad for this
not
album.
Not bad.
That's not bad. That's respectable. Yeah. You know, and it got good reviews. But I look at this. If it was on a better label and it got marketed better.
Yeah, you get more.
He would
pump it to 200.
Right.
200,000.
The one thing that goes against it is I don't know radio programmers would have found a single necessarily on this. He definitely went for, remember his sophomore album, Jewels, he definitely went for more radio-friendly songs.
Right.
At least a couple on that one, with the R&B hooks.
Right.
And whatnot. What do you think The Source gave this album in November 1994?
3.5.
He gave it 3.5. Do you feel like, I feel he got robbed on that one.
Okay, once again, we gotta look at the vibe of this whole year. Death Row.
Okay.
West Coast domination. Okay. You have that. And then on the other end, you have The Source magazine, which is basically a mobster mentality magazine.
Right.
If you pay me the dough, I give you the 4 mics, I give you the 5s, right?
Right.
Who's really credibly giving a real review in there? We really don't know. Is it John Schechter? Because he's howling? And he don't care? He ain't taking a bribe? I mean, come on.
Okay.
So if you look at the bribes, if you look at Death Row, West Coast is hot. If Source were to put out that this album was 4 or 4.5 mics, just saying that.
Right.
Will that hurt their credibility going forward as a magazine?
Okay.
Because everybody that's all on the Death Row bandwagon is like, what the fuck is this shit?
I like this theory. I've never heard this theory.
It's because it's just, you're trying to push off the bandwagon that you got. You got people all liking the Death Row, the Warren G, making money.
Right.
Hip-hop's making money now.
Right.
Do you defer And do you be like, nah, you know what? They're great, but you know, let's put you in on OC right now. Mm-hmm. They'd be like, fuck you. Who give a fuck? So what do you do at that point?
Right.
Then you need to decide what's a credible review or not.
So the other take on it is, remember Source put Time's Up as top five single of, you know, top five singles of that entire year.
You can get away with that. They, well, I don't know about the decade. Well, now, top Source, five of the decade?
Source was putting it up. I mean, it's been in the top, their top, you know, hip-hop songs of all time. It's been on their list. But they, do you think the album just didn't meet the expectations based on that single? Because it is by far the best song. Could that be another thing? Or do you feel it was more West Coast, East Coast politics? Again.
It's political. I don't necessarily think that Time's Up was the best song in the album.
Wow. Okay. I like this. You like? What was it?
Because I like you. This stuff. I like this.
You like Word Life?
The vibey
Ozone.
Beats. Like this kind of beat. This is so good. This is 94 to me.
Right.
When it's kind of like this, I don't even know what the word is. Shit. I need to Google this. Ethereal? Okay. Is that even a word? Did I just make something up? But it's that vibey sound. If I can compare it to like foreign. What's the guy's? The Little Brothers offshoot. Foreign Exchange.
Oh, okay, Foreign Exchange, yes.
If you think of Foreign Exchange, that kind of whole production. Right. That's where this came from. Like, look at this beat right there. This is 94 to me. We have a sax, very... See, Zara's loving OC. And you have this kind of beat, this kind of production. This is what sums up, to me, 94. It does not... Death Row does not sum up 94 to me. Warren G does not sum up 94 to me.
Wow.
It's this kind of stuff. So that's why I hold this album dear. But this album is going to be politically biased if we go into the why it did not get the rating it got.
So I'm going to ask you this then. What's your mic rating in 94? What's your mic rating now?
Four mics in 1994. And I stayed four mics in 2020.
Okay.
Nothing changed. I don't think it got better. It was already good.
Okay.
I can't say it's historic, because then I'll be just talking out of my ass if I say that, because it's not truly historic.
It would be more of a personal classic.
It's a personal preference.
Yeah.
And if you talk to some hip-hop weirdo that's going to say, they may not say OC. You don't hear much of OC talk except for Time's Up.
Right.
You don't hear people talking about this album.
No. Well, so, most people can't name another song on this album, you know.
There is that.
But I just remember being in hip-hop circles and of fans, and Time's Up's the only song they know.
That's the only one that got the most play.
Right.
Because after that was the other single he had was Born to Live.
Born to Live and
that had the same
Word
beat.
Life. And Word that, Life had a remix, yeah.
And that had the same beat as Take You There from Pete Rock and Seal. Exactly. Everybody had that piano.
So we played it earlier, right?
So it kind of got lost in the shuffle. So.
Well, I agree with you. I think I loved it even more back then. I was like 4.5 mics. I was the one that was saying, why isn't this album being talked about in the same breath as Illmatic?
Right.
You know, I agree with you. Some of it's a little dated, but it's still four mics to this day. It holds up really, really well.
Yeah, I don't think it's gotten better.
It's an awesome album.
But
yeah, it's an awesome album. All right, now we have a new
segment.
But I'm gonna basically
is add anything
this,
new on this show?
I'm gonna add this tagline in on these particular albums. It's called Treasure or Trash.
Oh, okay. I think you
yes.
You messaged me this. I ignored it.
We're going to talk about a group that is arguably one of the most overrated, I don't know, overhyped groups in hip-hop in the last 20, 30 years.
Do I need a drink for this?
You might.
Well, all right. Well, I have a drink here. All
right. But it is a group we know as the Fugees.
Wonderful.
And
wonderful.
Their album, Blended on Reality, debuted February 1st, 1994 on Rough House Columbia Records.
So,
this is the original vocab version, not the remix, because that didn't come out till 95.
Where to begin?
Where to begin, yes.
What should I start this?
Well, how about this? You gather your thoughts. I'm going to give a little background on the Fugees.
All right. I'm going to go get
do
some.
Do that, right?
I'm going to get
the
a drink.
South Orange, New Jersey trio, Wyclef Jean, Praz Michel, and Lauryn Hill. Fugees, obviously named after the Haitian refugees that Wyclef and Praz descended from. They moved, they immigrated from Haiti when they were, you know, 10 years old. and then the three of them met in high school when Praz approached Lauren into joining a band, and it was originally called the Translator Crew, right? Because this was their first idea was, we're gonna sing and rap in different languages. We're gonna integrate French and African and English, and we're gonna be singing and rapping. And because another person in the group left, they brought in Wyclef into the group.
Oh, we're done? Oh, was that your intro? Sorry, I was wandering around.
And then they began recording what was to become this album, Blended in Reality, in 1992. That's why this album sounds so dated by 94. Because they were recording this for like 2 years and just sitting on it.
Okay.
Now, from what I heard, the legend of the Fugees is that their live shows were incredible. And that's why they got signed to Rough House Columbia, because their live shows were so incredible. Now, this album, before I even get into my thoughts on it, let's get your thoughts. Do you remember when this came out?
Yes.
Okay.
I remember Boof Boff.
Right.
The single.
I didn't lead off with that because that is one of the worst songs.
It's awful. Oh, you're going to play it? Oh, God.
We'll turn it off.
Can we? Yeah, I like that answer. Turn it
we
off.
We just want to get... I want to hear this intro. Ooh. This is rough. Yeah.
All right.
Wyclef is... Obviously, he's made his mark. He's a legend as far as production and sales. His songs, you know, he sold millions and millions of records. He has almost hundred million streams, you know, of his music.
All right. Or you wanted my take first, right?
Okay, yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna give it this way. I'm gonna list things.
Okay.
I'm not gonna go into some rant. I'm not gonna go into some long opinionated thing.
Okay.
I'm just gonna state list of things that I feel is wrong with this album.
Okay.
One, very roughly cut and roughly done.
Right.
The styles were all over the place where they didn't seem to quite have the gel or chemistry that a group should have.
Right. They seemed like they were rapping on three different records.
Right. Yes, they weren't in the studio at all together, and they just were going off.
They were in the studio together. They just weren't together together. Right.
The next thing is it took them 2 years to make this album?
No, well, it was...
How long it took to record
it
this?
It was songs that they were recording for in the course of, I guess 2 years. But what Wyclef said is basically the record label kept making them go back, remaster tracks, redo tracks.
I'll tell you why.
Add tracks.
There's a good reason why. Because it's garbage is why. If I was the record label, I wouldn't send this to Island Records. I wouldn't send this to Wild Pitch Records. All right, good job, Rough House Columbia. That was Rough House Columbia, right? That was on this.
Well, you got to look at Rough House. This made sense because they were signing Cypress Hill, The Goats,
right.
Fugees.
They were going different routes.
White, they were artists that were appealing to white rappers. Well, I mean, white fans.
Outside of the box groups.
Outside of the box. I think they looked at Fugees of like, these guys are going to play Lollapalooza or something.
Right. So let's go outside of the box from the typical shit. I totally understand that.
Right.
The marketing, as far as the imagery, I didn't have an issue with. I mean, they're three good looking people. We get it, Lauryn Hill. She's a great, good looking gal. You have two guys.
Yeah. And a woman. Standpoint, they're very marketable.
It makes total sense. I get it. But it's just a mishmash of trash. This album was just so not listenable.
Right.
Not listenable whatsoever. From moment one. They played this on Radio Free a lot. They played Boof Boff on Radio Free a lot. And I remember them always pushing Boof Boff.
And,
I was like,
and there
okay.
was remixes. Do you remember the remixes? They
there
had
was
like
remixes.
Some kind of like
tons
reggae
of remix.
Remix. They had a rockin'
right, it
kind
didn't help
remix.
Them for nothing. All right. And so I'm going into this, buying this album, not liking Boof Boff, but thinking there's going to be some light at the end of the tunnel here.
Right.
And there was no light. It got darker.
There was a light. There was a light. We'll play it right now.
What song in his album was a light?
It wasn't on the album.
Exactly. It wasn't on the album.
But I'm saying the light at the end of the tunnel
is the remixes.
Was Salaam Remy.
He saved their career.
He saved their career. And I don't think Wyclef really gives him the credit.
No, he doesn't, because Wyclef is an arrogant piece of shit. But I digress.
Shout out Wyclef.
Wyclef, you've had your moments, bro, where you kind of you talk out your ass. All right, I'm just gonna say that.
Well,
right
he's
now
a politician now. He ran for president of
exactly.
Haiti.
Exactly. That's what I was getting to. Thank you.
He's doing Shakira. He's hanging out with Bono and stuff.
Yeah, right. They're signing documents. All right. So let me tell you this: if it wasn't for Salaam Remy, this group would be in the toilet. This group would not have a second album. Where she would go and make her "Killing Me Softly" song, which their greatest song was a cover. Mm-hmm. It wasn't anything original. This was their best song. If we have to look at the Fugees, this is their number one song right here, Nappy Heads.
Wow.
This is it. After this, there's nothing else. Nothing else. So, and it's not even on their album. It's a remix. Because wow. Then if you look at Fuji Law, all right, that doesn't hold up to this. This was the perfect chemistry of all three of them.
Yeah.
Wyclef was as perfect. It was perfect Wyclef. Perfect.
I saw the music video for Boof Bath, and I was like, yeah, no, I'm not picking up this album.
No, she shut him, better shut him on a level.
Then a few months later, this single was released in the fall of 94, and then I was like, I gotta get this single. This
exactly.
was like, it was like a whole new reinvented sound.
Exactly.
It was unbelievable. It was like it was the biggest turnaround of a group for one song.
Exactly. This is a five mic
song. That I can
think
of in hip hop.
This
right?
is a five mic song, Wyclef.
What group turned their career like completely 180 in one song? I can't think of it off the head like this. That
there
was
is
as dramatic
none.
As this.
Not
and
as
then
this.
Led to a triple diamond, 30 million, you know, record selling album, The Score, right?
Everything was so perfect about this album, about this remix, is because the video was done perfectly. The back and forth between them was perfectly. A lot of different, just the way Wyclef would throw in different references of things, it was just perfectly done. And then you have Fraz coming in with his voice.
Right.
Perfect.
Yeah.
This perfect
song. It
was
a great mix.
And then the beat, and then the video, they established Lauryn Hill as this very confident woman with these two guys.
MC to watch.
Exactly. And they're smooth.
Right.
And the beat of this is similar to OC kind of beat. It's
chimes.
This is the 94, I know.
Right.
It's that mellow vibey stuff. A lot of people come, you know, they test to that. That's why, like, the, you know, people like Electric Relaxation, for example. A lot of that will stem from these kind of beats.
Right.
This is it. This is five mic song.
So this album was a flop. It sold 12,000 copies when it dropped. And they were almost going to get dropped, you know, by the label. And then this single was released.
Saved their career.
And it bumped up the sales. They re-released it, remember, with the remix. And then it bumped the sales up to 130,000. So, hey.
It saved their career.
It saved their career.
And then from there, that's when they got asked to perform this.
Right.
And then when they performed this live, then people got to see why they signed them in the first place, because of the live show.
They're all about the live.
And they did this perfectly live, because they would change the beat. They would have a live band. So you have these three guys with a live band. And then whenever they cut to the different verses, they change the beat up.
Yeah.
They go hyper. They go mellower.
Right.
Then we're like, wow, this is a great performance too. They got it all.
Yep.
Do they have an album? And that saved their career.
So I guess, you know, a lot of people have gone back to this album. I think it's pretty much just dick riding off of The Score, because they just want to kiss their ass.
Yeah.
And to be like, oh, I liked you from Blended on Reality. And so I've read a lot of articles online of guys going back and they're revisiting Blended on Reality and saying, okay, well, it was slept on, it was, you know, it was forgotten about and it was overlooked. That's why I brought up this segment called Treasure or Trash, because there's a lot of people that are saying that this album is a treasure now.
Who are these people? Wait a minute.
I'll send you the links.
Give me the numbers. I'll call them up. There's no... Wait a minute. You're telling me right now. Do you know people in the flesh that say that this album is good?
No, but I've been reading a lot of articles doing research on the Fugees for the podcast, and was shockingly reading these articles about these guys that are saying, like, oh, you should revisit it. It's genius. It's brilliant. I'm like, wait,
who are
what?
These fucks?
What do you think The Source got gave this in 94?
Three mics.
It got three mics, exactly. March 94. What do you give it now and then?
Zero mics. Zero fucking mics. No negative anything. Just give me a straight zero.
Right. Five mics to Nappy Heads remix.
Five mics to Nappy Heads remix.
And
zero mics for this fucking album. even the vocab remix. Let's not forget the vocab.
It's
remix.
An amazing remix.
Vocab remix is another great remix.
That wouldn't drop until '95,
right?
Because they even released that bootleg versions, the remix album, right, with all the added stuff. That was post, you know.
Right.
But yeah, this is another Salaam Remy remix.
Saved their career. This was another one.
They should be kissing that man's feet.
They should.
Granted, Wyclef went on to sell way more records than Salaam Remy has ever sold in his life. But
it was him that directed them to go this route.
He shifted, and I think if it wasn't for Salaam, then Wyclef wouldn't have been able to produce a beat for like Ready or Not. Because it wasn't in their sound before.
It's simple. They saw the success of this and Nappy Heads and like, this is what we gotta do now.
Right.
This is it. We figured it out. And they figured it out. So yes, they are good musicians, but they needed somebody to tell them this is what you do. Salaam Remy was that man.
Right. Do you feel there is one MVP of the group? If you had to single one out. I know you have a distaste for this group, but if you had to single one MVP out for you personally, who would that be in the group?
I think it's got to be Wyclef.
Right.
Wyclef's the MVP because he does shit like that, right? He puts in references of all kinds of things.
He makes cartoon voices.
It's entertaining.
Yeah, he does movie quotes.
Right.
He's doing sound effects.
It's entertaining. And then you put him as the opener. And then you put in Lauryn Hill because everybody... Lauryn Hill's like the main event. Lauryn Hill's the main course because we're all waiting to hear her, the female MC. And then you put in the added pros as a cleanup hitter. It's a great formula. It's a perfect formula. And
Wyclef was the global Puffy, if you think about it, right? He was the guy that was like, we need Latin singers. We need African singers. You know, I'm going to do Guantanamera. I'm going to do, you know, all this stuff. I'm going to sample the
Bee Gees. He's not stupid.
And I'm going to get Kenny Rogers on a record.
He's not stupid.
The guy is really
smart. He had The Rock
on
a record.
Really
smart. Remember that one?
Yeah.
So he knows what
The Rock, that's right.
It doesn't matter,
right?
From
the Carnival, yeah. It doesn't matter, yeah.
He's
Was that the Carnival 2?
Oh, Carnival 2, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
But he knows he's not stupid.
So
it's perfect formula.
I think the answer is clear. Treasure or trash in 2020, you're going trash with this album.
Sewage. Jesus.
All right.
Anybody listening to this album?
Let's move on
to... It's a good album. Shut the fuck up.
Let's move on to a palate cleanser.
Good album.
Let's talk about...
Historical album.
Let's talk about an MC that I think we both can agree upon. It's Brooklyn rapper Kendrick Davis, a.k.a. J. Rude the Damager. The Sun Rises on the East is the album that came out on Payday Records, May 24th, 1994.
I always liked this album. I like that.
Payday Records,
I like
yes.
it. I always thought of the bar, the candy bar.
Yeah.
Payday. I like it. Okay, so
home of J. Rude as well as... Was Group Home on Payday as well?
I'm going to say yes.
And I want to say OC, after he left, Wild Pitch went to Payday as well.
Yeah.
I'm sure these guys did not get paid at Payday.
There were no days of getting paid at Payday. But that's another topic. Okay. I don't even know. See, this is like the Outkast album. Like, what are we going to talk about this for?
There's nothing
to talk about this. It's a five-mic album.
It's a perfect album.
That's it.
It's a perfect album.
That's it.
So let me just go. Maybe we'll just use this segment and go into a little bit of brief history on J. Rude. He went to high school with, you know, one of the Gangstar affiliated members. Remember, Gangstar wasn't just Guru and Premier. They had like nine guys behind him, and no one knew who they were besides Big Shug. So basically,
exactly.
J. Rude went to high school with one of these guys, met Guru, and Guru loved his style and featured him on I'm the Man on the Daily Operation album from 1992. And Premier fell in love with his flow so much that he was the one that proposed I'll produce the entire J. Rude debut album. And I think that just like Premier, just like any great producer, when that producer is inspired by the artist, they come out with their best shit.
That's true.
And Premier dug into his bag for this. Yep. I'd say we're going to talk about the history of Premier as far as an album artist, as far as an album producer. You got this, Hard to Earn, the Group Home album, the Living Proof album.
Yep.
As far as beats and production, like three masterpieces of production. You know, and you can go into other stuff, right?
This is actually the shittiest song on the album.
Oh yeah, I mean,
you know what I'm saying? Like, play. What do you play? Play Static. give people an idea of well, if you're listening to this show, quite frankly,
and you don't know this album yet,
then I don't know why you're listening to this show. Yeah. You must have stumbled upon it drunk, like searching something.
But so, you know what's so great about J.Ru is that J.Ru mixed the New York attitude of like a G-Rap or a Kane, right, with that skill level of rapping, but conscious pro-black views of like KRS-One, right, Guru, yeah, Jungle Brothers, but he did it in this really a way where he wasn't preaching to you. He came off, he like wanted to hear what he had to say.
It's not a preachy situation at all.
No, because as much as I love KRS-One, KRS-One, I only can be yelled, you must learn so much, and I get, he's not rapping to me as a white devil.
Because he's the teacher, right. That's what teachers do, they become annoying.
But, yes. some of the BDP stuff was like, you know, homework.
Right.
And this album was getting its message through, but with so much style and so much finesse, and he was incredible. He's still one of my favorite 90s rappers.
Great voice, great production, every song is great. Five mics then, five mics now.
Yo, Come Clean was released in October 93. Do you remember the first place you heard it? Was it Yom TV Raps?
No. I got the tape. I got the tape single
before,
at Sam Goody.
Before it even dropped. So you blind played this tape. It must have blown your mind.
Yeah, because I read about him. I knew of him already.
Right, he was being written about in the source.
Right, so then I was like, okay, here's the guy. Okay, this is it. And then it was a green tape cover. I believe it was a green tape cover. It has a picture of his face on it.
Right.
It was a close up of his face.
Side view of his face, a close up.
Yeah.
He's like standing in an alley against a wall.
And then the back of it had the cartoon drawing of his logo, which is him with the dreads.
Right, the Dirty Rotten Scoundrels with the dreads, right.
And that's all I knew. And then I put it in and I went on the bus, and then I got hooked right when he said, Michael Jackson. For some reason, that was when it clicked. I'm like, fucking hell, this is
man,
shit.
I could totally see you listen to this on the bus and get your mind just blown off this.
I sat there, I'm like, shit. And I'm just sitting there. And then I just rewound it.
Yeah.
Like, okay, gotta get the record.
My introduction was seeing the video on
And then that was next level. Rap. That was next level.
It was unreal.
Because I'm like, wow, the video's out.
And then we had to wait. We had to wait for like 6 months for the album to drop.
Because then he put out You're Playing Yourself.
Right.
Right. And then
The Original.
Which is another great video. But
and You Can't
The Original
Prophet.
I'm sorry.
The Original was the second single.
Yeah, The Original. You're Playing Yourself was the other
and
album.
And the You Can't Stop the Prophet
great
remix with the Pete Rock remix.
Yeah.
Do you like the Premiere Original or the Pete Rock remix?
We talked about this.
You Can't Stop the Prophet.
The Pete Rock is the one.
It's the standout. I think it's really one of those few songs that
Pete Rock beat him.
It's, you know,
Pete Rock beat Premiere on that one. I'll choose. But from the get-go, you're just waiting for him to come out. The single, the video where they distorted, the guy was tied up in the video with the water dripping on him. And they didn't show what was going on with the guy. So what, did we ever get that figured out of what was the distortion of the guy in the video about?
It was never revealed, not that I could find.
Like, what could that be? Like, was he getting mutilated or was it blood? Like, what, are they, MTV doesn't show
blood? I mean, they were in the hood, man, so it could have been pretty wild shit, right?
Well,
but you know what, J.Ru was only 22 when he recorded this album. He looked 35.
Yes. He's the Wilford Brimley of hip-hop.
And the album would also feature the first appearance of another, to me, very slept-on rapper. Do you remember the one guest appearance on this album?
Afu Ra
on Mental Stamina.
He just... Timing. It was all timing.
Yeah.
Timing wasn't right for him.
And we had to wait too long for Body of the Life Force, that album, to drop.
Took way too long.
Yeah.
We were in a different world back when it came out then.
Right. Well, I think you're right. You go from anything from, like, jungle music to My Mind Spray to, you know, there isn't one bad song on this album, you know. And your least favorite song is My Mind Spray. My least favorite song is The Bitches.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned that. I think you mentioned that on the past episode.
And that was the episode that got erased.
So, see, therefore, you didn't miss anything out there, guys.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, the Bitches, I just like the beat.
Yeah, the beat is so smooth.
And the subject matter is not about demeaning to women. Well, people... If you're listening to this once again, you're going to know what the Bitches song is.
So yeah, but it is. I get what you're saying in the sense of it's not a degrading song. It was actually, I'm not talking about, you know, the Black Queens. I'm talking about the Bitches. So he distinguishes it. But it was just one of those songs that it was never one that really, like, caught my attention.
Was that released as a single?
No, it wasn't. Was there was only the three singles, Come Clean, The Original, and You Can't Stop the Prophet. Okay. But 10 tracks, 3 skits. This album clocks in at 39 minutes, under 40 minutes, perfection. It's all killer, no filler.
Five mics, that's it.
I wouldn't take a song out of there. It's 5 mics. What did it get from the source? What do you think it got from the source?
4.
It got 4 from the source. No. And again, I think it got political a little bias. Shortchanged. It should have got 4.5, I think.
Political bias.
All right. Now our last album is going to be another Treasure or Trash record from 1994.
What a way to end out this episode.
It's a guy from the West Coast. His name is Volume 10. And the album is Hip Hopera.
Oh, okay.
Released April 26, 1994 on Immortal Records. Remember Immortal Records?
Yeah.
It was a subdivision of RCA. His real name is Dino Hawkins.
Dino.
Right.
D-I-N-O or D-E?
Like D-I-N-O, like Dino Summer Girls. Remember that guy that sang Summer Girls?
I was going to say like Flintstones. Okay, yeah.
And Dino from the Flintstones, yes.
All right.
But the LA-based rapper was discovered at the Good Life Cafe. He was a contemporary of Freestyle Fellowship.
Yeah.
What was your initial reaction when you heard Volume 10?
I dug the Freestyle Fellowship stuff, so I was like anyone else that dug Freestyle Fellowship. The moment hearing Volume 10 is coming out with a solo project, I'm gonna be like, "All right, I'm down. I'll wait for it."
I love the cover of the album.
Great cover.
Amazing cover.
Very hard to find album at first. I would always go to Jelly's and I always would ask, because then all the tapes were behind. You'd have to ask somebody to get the tape for you.
Right.
So you would go and ask the said person, and you would tell them, you guys got the new Volume 10? And then they'd be like, Volume 10 of what? No, Volume 10 of what? That's the name of the guy.
Turned into a comedy bit.
Exactly. Yeah, who's on first? Who's on first? So I'm like, fuck, I'm such a loser listening to this hip-hop shit. No one knows what the fuck I'm listening to.
So funny you said that. So. I caught the bus to Pearl Ridge Tower to get this. They ordered 2 copies.
That's about right. That sounds right. That's
so
fully stocked.
I guess that was the buyer's. He was like, this is about the hype Volume 10 has at the time.
Yeah.
But, you know,
someone buys it.
You know, he started rapping in the late 90s. He actually worked with Cut Chemist in the beginning. He was actually kind of affiliated loosely with Jurassic 5. And then, you know, Charlie Tuna was the guy that got him to perform at Good Life. And it was this unorthodox kind of singing rap style.
Yeah.
That really like kind of made him stand out, I guess, you know, for in the Good Life.
Well, right, and he's got that voice.
And he was actually like, he was different from Freestyle Fellowship because he was rhyming about gangster kind of shit.
Right, he was the gangster guy.
This was the lead single, Pistol Grip Pump,
which got a lot of radio play.
Yeah,
it's a danceable song. People like, it's a club song. Believe it or not,
people in LA, this is a classic in LA.
Yeah,
they know this song.
Yeah. Once he got more known. Once this song came out and got him more notoriety, because he was really like underground.
Yeah.
2 copies at Towers.
Right.
People think it's Volume 10 of like some other compilation. Nobody knew who this was.
They didn't know how to market this guy.
They didn't know how to market him. And it's, once again, it's kind of like another Fugees. It's like, what do you do with this?
Right.
How do you sell it? He had this hit, but what do you do? Didn't he have like another single too, like Sunny Days or Sunrise or Sun in the West? He had another single. What was the other single?
Okay, let's see here what it was.
Sun Roses or Sunflowers.
I didn't know he had another single.
Look at the flowers.
I thought it was Pistol Grip Pump.
It's like a Volume 10.
Okay.
I would have sworn he had some other song that he tried to push. It didn't go anywhere, of course, but...
Well, while you're looking that up, first appearance on Wax was on Freestyle Fellowship's Heavyweights, the Posse Cut.
Right, that's right.
And that's actually what got him to get signed to Immortal Records.
They Sunbeams.
What was it called?
Sunbeams.
Oh, Sunbeams.
That was a single. He made a video for that.
There was a video? I've never seen it.
Yeah.
That was played probably once on... It was probably played once on Yo MTV Raps.
Well, yeah. Sunbeams is not going to be played once in 2020.
We're playing it right now.
Radio Free played this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did not hear it on Radio Free. I think the album is all over the place as far as because he had all these different producers.
It's a compilation, a true compilation.
Okay. You can kind of compare this in a way to the album we spoke about in our last show, Saphir's Boxcar Sessions.
Right.
In the sense of it was so out there, and you could look see it from a record A&R guy's perspective and a record executive going, like,
how do you market it?
What do we do?
You know? Oh, I remember this one, Tricks and Hoes. Tricks and Hoes and Tricks and Hoes. That's comedy to me.
So, I don't know if you knew about this controversy, but Volume 10 had a beef with the Lynch Mob and Ice Cube. Did you know about this?
Oh,
because he felt the Lynch Mob and Ice Cube went to the Good Life, and remember when Ice Cube just started rapping the boom, ping, ping?
Oh, right.
And they started, and Gorillaz in the Mist
came out.
There has
been a talk about that.
And they were doing that. Volume 10 felt like they ripped his style off.
I can see that. I understand what he's saying.
And he actually released a song called Fuck a Gorilla.
As he should have.
No bestiality themes now, but it was a diss to the Lynch Mob.
I need to hear that one. I have not heard that one.
And I guess it's only available on YouTube or whatever.
All
right. But yeah, like, you know, I can totally see that.
Well, I can see that. I agree. I'm looking at the lineup here of songs.
Do you remember listening to this album? You owned it, right?
Yeah, I have this album. Flowood. I just remember, like, the choruses, because, like, when I see the song Flowood, I just see the word titles. I just remember, doesn't he sing it like, the Flowood?
Yeah,
right? Okay, so then there's that. And then we got Knockout Just Go! Knockout Just Go! See, I just know the choruses. It's memorable choruses. And then Harder Than All Y'all. I'm harder than all y'all niggas! That's... So I know all of the choruses here.
It's just... This album... Okay. I can listen to this in, you know, in track chunks, like on a mixtape or whatever. I don't know if I can listen to this entire album top to bottom, but I appreciate what he's trying to do.
No.
I mean, this was the equivalent of punk rock hip hop. Don't you think? This was
punk
really
rock,
punk rock.
I can see punk rock hip hop as a description to this. Where's the sniper? Isn't that the chorus? Where's the sniper?
Yeah.
I mean, right? It's like, it's just taking me back now. I just know all of the choruses.
He had such a distinct voice, and he would, and his voice would go in and out and up and down, and
it's entertaining. I get it. Harder Than All. Oh, Home Alone. Wasn't the chorus for Home Alone?
Right.
Home Alone.
Right.
It's just fantastic. And then,
you know, I don't think you're gonna be surprised by this, but a lot of his lyrics were just written spontaneously.
He's Old Dirty Bastard style,
right? He's got better lyrics than ODB.
Right, but he's wacky. A Real Freestyle, I remember.
Real Freestyle is good. That's got the whole, like, Good Life alumni on there. You got, like, Ganja K on there and Seven.
I'm trying to think which song starts with what's the chorus, so that we can just hear it to give people an idea of what I've been yelling the last, like, 10, 20 seconds. Does Flowood start with him saying, Flowood? Does he do that? Probably not, yeah. What about Knockout Your Skull? Does he say that in the beginning? Which one is this?
This is Knock Out Your Skull.
Oh, that's right. This is it.
Yep.
I haven't heard this in like 20 years. Jesus. How does this go? Yes, I remember this.
That's about the 90s of a West Coast beat as you're going to get.
Yeah, this is a 90s. I think he says it in the beginning, though. Like in this. Okay, well, he's going to go first chorus. Okay. Knock Out Your Skull!
This is one of my favorite songs on the album.
Because then he says it. Every time he says it, he changes his voice, right? Every time he says the chorus.
Yep.
Okay, let's end the show with Knock Out Your Skull and Volume 10. I think that's how he does it.
You know, the best songs in the album were all produced by the Baker Boys.
I don't doubt it.
It was... It's Pistol Grip Pump, Hip Hopera, Flowood.
That makes sense.
It's all Baker Boys.
There we go.
This is a fun song. I like
this
it.
This is great. Wow. All right. Was this Treasure or Trash? Okay.
This is Treasure or Trash, but hold on. 17 tracks, 14 songs, 3 skits. Obviously, this album was a flop, right? With 2 copies at Tower.
Made 10 bucks.
Right. He would part ways with Immortal Records, and then he wouldn't release an album until, you know, 2000. He had, like, the Psycho LP. Do you remember that one? It came out in 2000. The Source gave it 3.5 mics.
Yeah. I agree. 3.5.
Okay. What do you give it now and then as far as a mic rating? And is this Treasure or Trash?
You know what? Based on the fact that I'm just having kind of fun with this, it's Treasure.
Yes.
I like it.
Nice.
It's fun. It's fun. It's a fun album.
Right.
And I know people out there don't disagree.
This is definitely not everyone's cup of tea.
It's fun. Come on.
For Fuji fans, I don't think they're going to be into this.
They can kiss off. Get the fuck out of here. This is comedy. It's entertainment. This chorus alone beats out anything on the Fugees album.
No, it makes me wonder, like, wow, like, he was doing ODB before it was like, oh, this is around the same time as Wu-Tang, so, but I think if they nobody pick- in the West Coast really, I think this guy, Cocaine, they had some really, like, interesting, innovative flows that I think a lot of people copied and they don't get their credit, right? Him and Cocaine.
If Death Row still was an entity that didn't get caught up in rubbish, I think the next incarnation of Death Row would be pushing Cocaine and getting him on there and this guy. And that would be your next recruits for the new Death Row of the late 90s and early 2000s.
If they got their crap together, I mean, you know.
I think Suge Knight would be
RBX,
on point.
I think RBX should have had a better career.
I think if you wanted to put the new roster of people out, Volume 10, Cocaine, RBX, that would be the first thing I think of as far as the West Coast for the new, if Death Row did not melt down, signees.
This song is hilarious.
How can you not find this entertaining? I mean, if you're not, you gotta stick up your ass. You know?
Well, I like ending the show on a treasure.
Yes, this is
it wasn't all trash.
No.
Well, that's good.
I like it. I like this. I'm gonna listen to this album today.
All right. It is. They finally got all of the rights to it. It's on Spotify. It's on Apple.
It's on Apple.
It's on
Apple.
I'm looking at it now. Right now. I mean, it was this album was not available for years.
Oh, really?
I mean, it wasn't streaming for years. So
well, I don't. I'm not surprised, but I mean, it's quite obscure. But I have the vinyl of this, and I have the tape.
Yeah, I think if you're really into obscure, cool hip hop from the '90s, I think this is an album worth going back to. I don't think it's a hip hop classic, but it's super entertaining.
Right.
I agree. A guy who's really pushing the boundaries of like what is acceptable in hip hop or what is considered, you know.
It's outside the box.
It's really outside the box. It is punk rock. This is a punk rock album.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm all for that. So, you know what? That's good. We're ending on a nice note.
All right. That's good. Oh, look. You're not upset.
I'm not. I'm feeling kind of good right now. Right. I'm feeling kind of all right.
Knock out your skull.
Knock out your skull. Where's the sniper? I ask myself that every day.
All right.
And the Tricks and Hoes. I mean, really? And then Flowood.
Oh, yeah. Flowood. Yeah. He's going to go back and re-listen to this album.
Because he's harder than all y'all niggas. That's it.
And that sums it up.
And Home Alone. Aren't we all home alone during COVID?
Oh.
Track 11.
Ahead of his time.
Ahead of his... No, I was going to say before Home Alone. It's not before Home Alone. Never mind. Forget what I just said.
Yeah. Anyways, thank you guys for tuning in. Again, appreciate your expertise, sir. And we'll see you for another Throwback Thursday. Peace.